Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with GEICO.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, GEICO could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it.
These babies just saved this lame fest party.
GEICO presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The GEICO Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit GEICO.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Autobots, roll out.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not alone as I trek through spoiler-filled territory, though not in this show, I do promise you that. I'm joined from the man about town, Kitchener himself,
Alex, who's full of breakfast for dinner, which was tasty.
Good times. I haven't had dinner yet, but probably have that after the show. So hopefully you've had a fantastic time enjoying what I've called, this is a golden era of pop culture. We just had Avengers Endgame this past Thursday, and then last night on HBO was the Battle of Winterfell. This is an emotionally tiring weekend. Holy Christ.
Like, I know, what's the meme, I can only get so erect? Like, that's pretty much what it's been like the whole weekend. It's like, oh my God, battles, oh my God, battles, oh my God, battles!
Yeah, like, this has just been one of those times where I was talking with Mr. Christopher yesterday, and we described it as the Avengers and Game of Thrones and everything else. You look at where we are, we're at a cultural touchstone right now where the Marvel movies are this generation's Star Wars, because Star Wars hasn't been as big as I think it should have been, considering the new saga started back in 2014 with The Force Awakens and now concluding this year with The Rise of Skywalker. But you look at how universal the opinions are about Avengers. I've only seen one or two people who have opinions on it that aren't overwhelmingly positive. And I consider that to be kind of film snobby, but that's neither here nor there. But you think about, there are people who waited in line, who dressed up. And that's the thing for every Marvel movie. The last 22 movies, people have dressed up, have done special things for it. People have taken time off work. I know, Alex, you had an adventure with your Avengers Endgame experience.
Yeah. I'll touch on that briefly. But the last time I could think of, maybe actually, in the last 20 years, I've only known two other films that weren't Marvel related where people dressed up for them. Star Trek Nemesis, During Star Trek Nemesis, half of the theater I went to on opening night was full of people dressed up in their favorite Starfleet uniforms. That, you know, say what you will about that movie, I think it looks better in hindsight than it did at the time. But it was, that was the first time I'd ever been to a movie where people really dressed up. And I mean, Star Wars had a, had a spattering of it. But when I went and saw, like, randomly, Rambo, you know, the fourth one?
Yeah.
In, like, 2008, the really, really gory one. Mm-hmm. There were, like, four or five guys there decked out in full Rambo gear with face paint on, shirts off, fake, like, Toys R Us guns and everything. And they,
we
and
went the, and bought headbands for it. Well,
the theater let them bring in the guns because they were those ones that, you know, when they pull the trigger, it just it makes like a clicky sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can do that anymore. but no. Like, but I went to the theater and like that was, of all things, Rambo. People were like, I've been waiting for a new fucking Rambo movie for 25 fucking years. And that's, you know, they were all dressed up screaming, yeah, yeah, kill him. And I was like, oh, okay, okay, sir. But that being said, like, other than maybe a Star Wars movie or the Marvel films, those are the only two I can think of. And you know, that's, people didn't dress up for the new Star Trek series. Nobody dressed up really for that because all the Trekkies thought, like, the traditional Trekkies thought of it as a betrayal. And I'm feeling that, you know, what's the common denominator with, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek lately? It's been J.J. Abrams. His style kind of clashes with a lot of traditional fandoms. So I'm not going to, like, I personally don't like his films. And that would be why I would assume a lot of people aren't as hyped. And there's been sort of a big division in the fandom. Whereas you've had sort of one vision with a couple of stinkers like Thor: The Dark World and
Iron Man 3,
Incredible Hulk, maybe, that were a bit of letdowns. And but other than those, you've had one singular vision for 22 films. And similarly, Game of Thrones, like I've heard people are throwing Game of Thrones parties, like where people are going to be going every single weekend to their friends' places dressed up in character. And I would not be surprised if the final episode or final two episodes are shown in IMAX like they've done before. So, like, that started, I think, in 2010. I might be wrong, but because there was that weird year-and-a-half gap sort of between seasons. Mm-hmm. But they started around the same times. And as much as the Marvel movies have taken over the cinemas, basically, they're the only things really making money anymore that isn't a Transformers movie or, like, some sort of big, dumb Michael Bay movie. And then you've got the Game of Thrones taking over television in a way that hasn't been done since, like put it bluntly, since torrenting and online file sharing really began. Because I looked at it last night, Sopranos at its height, which was the most popular HBO show ever at the time, was getting 12 million viewers live during its height. And then that was, you know, everybody that was paying, because you only had one way to pay back then. It was to watch it, pay your 20 or 30 bucks a month for HBO and watch it. And then there were people pirating it and doing everything in the early days of it. But the Game of Thrones, if you include the people that paid to watch it on iTunes or paid to watch it through Amazon or paid directly for their over-the-top app, HBO Now?
HBO Go, I think.
Go or Now. One of the two, either way.
Yeah.
If you added that into the live viewers, they were, first of all, getting the same amount of live viewers that Sopranos did in a day and age where people, like 75% of people, don't even have cable anymore. But they're getting that. That means people are paying just to watch that one show. And then you add in the people that paid legally for it, and it ends up being 18 million. They're getting almost double the viewers that their previous best show had ever gotten in this day and age where three quarters of the population doesn't even have cable. And then you add into that they, you know, are like, Warner Brothers has been pretty good about, like, they know their shows are getting pirated through HBO, but they actually count the pirated numbers as part of their viewership. And we're approaching, like, Friends finale levels of viewership. Like, it's possible that the very last episode in 4 weeks, or 3 weeks, actually, might actually beat MASH, which was which was thought impossible. And this is including, of course, everything that's pirated. But again, they view them as potential people to buy the DVDs. Because they, in the early seasons, were only getting 2 million viewers during season one, but they sold 4 million DVD sets. that doesn't just happen out of nowhere. So they realized people were watching it. They couldn't afford to pay a monthly fee, but they can afford to pay $60 for it. So it's as much as some people don't like the show, or they might be turned off by maybe at the beginning there was a lot more nudity, or there might be too much violence for them. It has taken television by storm as much as Marvel has taken the cinemas.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of another event television that's been like this in a number of years. Game of Thrones is one of the best shows on television, hands down.
Yeah, if you go the last,
it will be remembered in television history.
If you go the last 20 years, event television where you must watch it, it's probably just three shows: Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and Game of Thrones.
You could you could make a pretty good argument for Walking Dead as well.
It's kind of surprising how many viewers it was getting, and as much buzz as it was getting. I don't remember it being I was working in offices. The water cooler talk was always The Sopranos, always Breaking Bad, and then Game of Thrones. It was the like, nobody spoil Breaking Bad. It's the last season. Like, no, anybody says anything, I'll fucking cut you. That sort of shit. So I can't think of anything that had this kind of maybe fervent, like rabid fans.
I'd say in the first 5-6 seasons, Walking Dead had that. But then as it dragged on and it started to drift away further and further from the comic books, it became less and less like that. So, but yeah, I mean, AMC, HBO have definitely led the way in terms of event television. And we live in a golden era of pop culture. We are spoiled for choice now, which is utterly fantastic. So coming up on the show this week, we got to obviously talk about the Avengers, though we will not be holding our spoiler talk for at least a week to 2 weeks to give people a chance to go out to theaters and see it. We're hopefully going to be joined by Mr. Christopher, who's taking a little bit of a vacation right now, so we'll hopefully see him back on the show in a little bit. We're going to be taking a look at a Marvel character encyclopedia coming to us from DK Publishing. We're also going to look at Days Gone from Sony Computer Entertainment, and finally, a Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from Paramount Home Entertainment, and I've got some thoughts on that. And of course, Satan's Pantry, which has currently, we've been taking a look at the WWE cookbook. Today we'll be looking at Nature Boy Ric Flair's Woo Pea Pies, and we'll get into that. And of course, the weird news that you've come to expect from us here on the show. So we'll be back right after these messages from our sponsors. We'll be back, guys, right after this. We are looking at the Marvel Studios Character Encyclopedia coming to us from DK Publishing. Well, Avengers Endgame is in studios, and we are finally at the end of the 11-year journey that Marvel has brought us along for. We've gathered the Infinity Stones, and it is time to talk about some of the characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And this book actually has done a fantastic job of introducing us to the many characters we've met along the way. And they do sort them by the character that they're typically associated with. For example, the Avengers has Nick Fury, Maria Hill, Black Widow, Hawkeye, whereas Ant-Man would have Dr. Hank Pym, Anthony, the giant ant guy. Also, Guardians of the Galaxy breaks it down through Yondu, Ronan the Accuser. Black Panther has T'Challa, T'Chaka, M'Baku. Captain Marvel, which is about when you could tell this book was released around, only has Captain Marvel and Talos, doesn't go into some of the other characters that we meet during that movie, lest we get spoilers from it. This book also does not acknowledge the Marvel Universe Netflix shows, nor does it acknowledge Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which has introduced more characters into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, though the Netflix shows and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show have always had a interesting relationship, shall we say, with their cinematic counterpart. You do get 176 pages, rather, of different characters, full glossy photos, and a little bit of information from each character, what movies they've appeared in, stuff like that, how they've contributed to the plot, and who they are. And it's a fantastic addition. If you've forgotten who some of these characters are, when you go back and watch some of these 22 movies, you're like, oh yeah, it was that guy, or this person did this, or oh yeah, I forgot this person showed up in this particular scene, sort of thing. So it's a nice character reference. It is pretty accessible. I think, for most people. And considering the book is only a suggested retail of about $20 up here in Canada, $21.99, it's not that bad, especially if you're a Marvel Cinematic Mark like I am, then you should definitely be adding Marvel Studios Character Encyclopedia from DK Publishing to your shelf.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
Alright, Avengers, assemble as you will here on This Week in Geek. Otherwise, I'm going to twig your flagship of stupidity. And of course, it's time to dive into the news that is, was, and was revived by the snap. Let's talk about the Avengers. And this weekend, Avengers Endgame has hit theaters, counting Thursday night previews to Sunday. The theater juggernaut that is Avengers Endgame has currently been estimated to have made $1.2 billion, $350 million coming from U.S. and Canada alone from Thursday night to Sunday, according to some estimates. In China, the movie opened on Wednesday, and it collected $330.5 million, and then a rest from around the world. According to this, some theaters in the States, specifically the AMC theater chain, were opening at odd hours, such as 7 a.m., to keep people going to see Endgame. And some of those theaters have been kept open up to 72 hours straight. So you're doing God's work, theater employees.
You know what that is?
I gotta say that.
Because this is the widest release. Release to have a three-hour movie. So it's hard to put that many showings in a day.
Some fans in China were paying more than $74 per ticket in the gray market for this, because I guess people are scalping it, so they're kind of douchebags. However, though, one of the people who is a senior media analyst at measurement company Comscore, Paul, I can't even begin to pronounce this guy's last name, is what we didn't count on is that the fans would show up happy at 3 in the morning for a three-hour movie. That, I, once again, Star Wars, the only time I can think of this being this nutty was Revenge of the Sith, which was the end of the prequel trilogy. Even Force Awakens, I don't remember having as many people rabidly excited for it. Endgame was something else.
I would say Phantom Menace. I remember I was in school, and I knew a kid that camped out with his family. Like his family was like, we're camping out from 9 at night until like this theater opened for like 11 a.m. or some weird – like usually you do a midnight showing, but It was like 11 a.m. the day before or some sort of stupid thing. They had a special screening. And that was just sort of crazy. I was like, what, like your family? Like, yeah, we just brought our sleeping bags. And I'm like, what? Why? That was the first time I had ever heard of that before.
When I did Phantom Menace, I was in high school. And I went to the line at 8:30 in the morning. I took the bus in from Shaw Lake, went to Owen Sound. I was not the first person in line. I think I was the fifth or sixth. And my teachers said, Mike, you can have the day off school. We won't mark you absent. But the deal is, you get us seats. Okay, no problem. So my teacher at the time, Mr. Bain, was like, okay, Mike, you got a seat for him? I'm like, you sure bet I do. And we ordered pizza in the line. We played the Star Wars role-playing game in the line. We had the books from West End Games, which was a lot of fun. Revenge of the Sith, I was the first person in my town in line. I went at 7 a.m., for a 3:30 p.m. showing on a very hot fucking June day. So that was fun. But for the Marvel movies, when I went to my theater, we had people dressed up in the Thor, or not the Thor. We had one girl dressed up as Thor. We had a couple people in the white Avengers outfits. We had a couple people dressed up as S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and we had a rocket raccoon, which was pretty cool. And there was this little cute girl. She must have been no older than 5 or 6, dressed in her Avengers jammies, which was like the Thor Ragnarok outfit. And she had like her little Mjolnir hammer, was like swinging that around. And her dad's like, my kid is so cool. And I'm thinking, yes, your kid is fucking awesome. it was so cute. But still, 1.2 billion in less than 5 days.
Yeah, the only time I can think of like it being that busy as well, where maybe it was more of a word of mouth thing, was remember when Gladiator came out? Was that 99 or 2000? Something around there.
2000, I think.
Yeah. There was a theater downtown in Kitchener that it was the theater I used to go to when I'd skip school for Toonie Tuesdays. Anyway, I went there and like they didn't have a Thursday midnight showing or a Friday midnight showing. So the first showing was at 3 p.m. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see this. So I went with my buddy. We paid her, I think, $5 for the ticket because it was one of those cheaper theaters. Go in. There's like 3 people in the theater. There's like nobody there. I'm like, okay. Awesome fucking movie. One of my favorite movies at the time. We go to leave and we're like, what the hell is that? We leave and there's a lineup. This is a theater where you had to go up an escalator to get into it. It was like a very tall building, but very short at the front. So there's a line leading out the lobby. People are standing in line up 3 flights of stairs, standing on the stairs, all the way to the outside, and it wrapped around the corner to City Hall, which is a block away.
Oh,
and
wow.
They ended up panicking because they had 2 screens. They had to put a sign up saying, if you're not, you know, the one of the next 500 people here, you're not seeing it. So they actually had somebody walk outside and like stand there saying, this is the end of the line. All of you can't come. Come back tomorrow. And that's the only time I had ever seen that, because it was one of those things where it didn't have like this giant marketing campaign. But what I think happened was, you know, I saw it, you know, 3 p.m. I'm pretty sure in other cities or bigger cities, they would have had a midnight showing. And then it probably hit the news about how good it was. And, you know, it's Ridley Scott's magnum opus and all this. And then people just started coming in droves. And for like 2 days, there were lines outside the building to go see it. And then it tapered off into nothing. This feels like one of those movies, like with the Avengers, where it's going to keep going for at least a week or two, where you're going to have trouble getting maybe the seat you want.
I have a feeling Endgame, because people will see it multiple times. I know there was a guy in, I think it was Indiana or Wisconsin, who saw Captain Marvel 100 times. People are going to see this multiple times.
100 times?
100 times.
I would question somebody's mental state.
Sanity? This is something I'd like to go see a few more times, but sitting in my wheelchair for that long, it's just really uncomfortable.
Well, this is the first one that really could have used an intermission. And, you know, my screening kind of did have one. when the power went out and then the generator went out and then we lost 15 minutes of footage. And I ended up with 2 free passes to go see other Disney movies this year. So, I mean, that was okay, but I did miss a couple central plot points that they said they were wound to fix, but they didn't. So I had to get it filled in from you, but we'll talk about that in the spoiler part next couple weeks, right?
Yes. So yeah, I really can't wait to see what the final box office total will be for the Avengers. I'm guessing it's going to I'm guessing it'll crush the $2 billion mark.
It's going to beat Avatar. Now
I think it already has.
No, Avatar's 2.7.
Not in 5 days, though.
No, talking total box office.
Yeah.
It's the interesting thing's going to be how much of a drop-off is. You're going to have people that repeat watch it over and over and over again. But you're also having this rush right now is, I feel like even myself, I was going to go see it in a week or two, but I figured I had to go because it was going to be unavoidable for spoilers. And I was like, I can't go this long without having something spoiled, and I'd rather go to see a 3-hour movie completely blind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really disappointed in some of the entertainment websites like Entertainment Weekly, IGN, et cetera, because they're posting articles discussing Endgame, but they're basically putting spoilers in their headlines. Like, here's the involvement of such and such a character and what it means for Endgame. They're thinking, well, asshole, anybody with half a brain can infer what happens to them now. Like, seriously,
and they wonder why
off.
People don't want to read news media anymore. Maybe it's because you've gotten so clickbaity that you're actually damaging your audience.
Well, nobody knows how to write a fucking headline. which disappoints me. I mean, it's kind of what I went to school for, and just it annoys the ever-living piss out of me that no one can write a half-decent headline that doesn't give away the entirety of your point you're trying to make. Your thesis should not be able to be summed up literally in a headline.
But they're trying to write, it's going to sound bad coming from me, they are writing for the lowest common denominator, the dumbest person that will click and view the ads. That's all they care about.
Yeah, and you're not wrong there. It's just the way internet advertising works, unfortunately. So, you fucking people. So, moving on to a story, and this one is, it's less of a news story than it is kind of something we're just kind of noticing. Evidently, the 3DS, well, that's pretty much it. A Nintendo spokesperson recently reached out to Kotaku, and it says, "We have nothing new to announce regarding our first-party software for the Nintendo 3DS family of system. We can confirm that new software is coming from third-party publishers," which means the most likely scenario here is that Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn is probably the last major first-party title for the 3DS, and then we're going to see Persona Q2 from Atlas Software a little bit later on as the last major release from a third-party publisher.
Which I believe, you know, barring anything, I'm probably getting a review copy of. I thought that there was another, wasn't there a Luigi's Mansion one, but I think that's already out. Or
yeah, there's supposed to be a port of Luigi.
I just is it Luigi's Mansion 2?
No, there was, it wasn't Bowser and Mario's Inside Story. No, that was getting a port to the Switch.
There's already stuff like that out. I'm pretty sure it was, because I know Luigi's Mansion, the second one, was already available on 3DS. I think it's a remastering of the original. There's a couple other titles that I know they announced for Japan, but I think they haven't officially announced for here. So right now, Kirby, which I reviewed this just a few days ago, actually, I believe is the last official first party that they've announced. So I'm assuming we're going to see a direct, and they'll probably burn off one or two titles. But I don't think we're going to get any new properties, is the idea. Like, the way that it's worded and the way that, that Nintendo is avoiding things, it doesn't mean they can't put out remastered or enhanced editions. It means I don't think that they have any teams developing anything new. And Atlas with Persona, Atlas is one of the companies that always seems to put out stuff, like high quality stuff, at the end of a system's life cycle, and they're usually one of the last companies to do so. Persona 4 came out like a year before, or actually it was in the last year that the PS2 was available. They've put out I think the very last PS3 game, like that's actually a first, or not first party, but like a new title. Persona 5 was on the PS3 and PS4, and I don't think there's been any thing released except maybe a sports title since then. Just Dance, because that never dies.
Yeah, because they're still putting that out for the fucking Wii, I think. But yeah, I mean, I think the 3DS had a rather impressive lifestyle. Basically, it added a lot of value to the Nintendo library. I mean, my 3DS, for example, is my virtual console. I've got so many games downloaded to that thing, 3DS titles included, but I've got a lot of Nintendo games downloaded to it, Game Boy titles. I haven't used it in quite some time because I have the new 3DS XL, so I was able to take advantage, I think, of the enhanced port of, I think it was Xenosaga 2 or something.
Yeah, that one, Xenoblade... the first one, it was a remaster, or no, yeah like a, not remaster, but like a port of the one that was on the Wii. Yeah, like with this, if this is the official death nail for them, and like it's it, there's not going to be anything else, that means it's the first time that we've lost backwards compatibility with the handhelds ever, because they were backwards compatible with DS titles. The DS was backwards compatible initially, at least, with Game Boy Advance and so on and so forth. You know, I don't see them magically making your entire library work on the Switch, because it's a fundamentally different design.
Which is really, I'm really surprised the Switch's virtual console doesn't work as well as the 3DS's, because if you told me I could download everything I've bought for the Wii U and my 3DS and put it on my Switch, even if I had to pay a small price, like be it like $2 a title, despite I've already paid for it on another service, I would do that. Because I know when I got my Switch, or when I had my Wii to the Wii U, if you wanted to download the newer version for the Wii U, you just had to pay like $1 or something like that. And I was totally fine with that.
Well, and the issue is not that it doesn't do touch, obviously. The issue is, how does it handle the dual screen? Now, it would be really fucking awesome if, you know, through some sort of cable or wireless technology, you could display on the big screen and then also do the small screen as the touch part, you know, so you'd have it sort of in handheld and TV mode. But to be honest, mm-hmm. the Switch just is so, as cool as the Switch is, it's so underpowered it couldn't handle a dual screen setup. The only reason you can with the DS is it's a fundamentally different design. I feel like the reason they were backwards compatible and the reason they had these things is they had these constraints they had to work with that were very, very tight. So they had to get very creative. And the ways they got around it was like the technology was very similar, like in the 3DS and the DS and all that, to like the Game Boy Advance. They never really changed a whole ton so that they wouldn't lose backwards compatibility. But when they jumped to the Switch, which is basically just a Pixel C with controllers on the sides and a smaller screen, like they jumped platforms completely, changed operating systems. You know, the price to pay is with having a console that's also a handheld is you'd sort of break the compatibility. You don't get the best of both. You get the best of both, but you don't get everything from both worlds, right? You know, you're not getting the most powerful system out there that can that can play, like, you cannot play Days Gone or any of these, you know, first party PS4 titles or Xbox One. You can't play Halo on the Switch. It just would never happen, or it would look like shit. It doesn't mean that those games are going to be shit, like when they have their own games. It just means you can't do these cutting edge graphics. That being said,
I'm surprised they ported Mortal Kombat 11.
You see what it looks like?
No.
It looks like Mortal Kombat on the PS2, just with smoother edges. But like Doom. Doom is one of the few ones that looks really good, but they also spent a year and a half porting Doom to make it work. So portability-wise, yes, it's the most powerful portable handheld you've ever had of all time, but it doesn't mean it's in the same league as the other big boys. So they've also, because going back to a singular screen, which I think was a good choice, they did break compatibility with dual screen things. So instead, you're having to port things instead of just, you know, putting an emulator in there. They can't just do what they did previously by throwing emulators on there. Like, you know, the Ace Attorney, the Phoenix Wright games?
Yes.
They just had a trilogy. The first three games were now ported to the Switch, and that's what you're going to see more of, is porting them where they, you know, integrate the control scheme a little differently. Because there is enough real estate on the screen. The resolution's good enough that you can, you know, fit the data from both screens on one screen. You just have to finagle it around a little bit so it doesn't look jarring. So I don't know, you know, what this necessarily means. I thought they might have supported it for another year or so. Like, you know, maybe, you know, give it to a 10-year anniversary or something, because there's enough people buying it. Like, the problem is, apparently, the hardware sales went down a lot from what they were expecting. Last year, they said, we're supporting it for years to come. And then they sold, like, a quarter of what they thought they were going to sell. And then the Switch actually undersold what they expected last year. So, like, they were projecting these super-duper high numbers. So now they're like, well, shit, we got to focus everything on our main product. So I wouldn't be surprised if they announce, you know, a few games and then it's gone. Or I don't know if Nintendo is going to come out and say, hey, we're done with this system. By the way, there's some games coming out. I think they'd be more likely to say, hey, look, we've got a couple of these titles. And then those titles come out, and then they'll come out, do some sort of special thing where they have, like, some Japanese executive bow towards it, and then they do some sort of ceremony thing in a direct to show that it's over. And then here's, you know, they'll show off, here's the new model of Switch that's a smaller, cheaper version for the kids. They'll do something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some kind of a passing of the torch. And I do like how Nintendo is making the Switch essentially a home console and its new handheld. I think that's rather innovative, the fact that it is powerful enough to handle a lot of these games. But I am going to miss the 3DS in a way, because I thought the 3D technology, though it wasn't really utilized in the last couple of years, was really, really innovative. So I don't know. I'm honestly going to miss it. I guess I should probably dig my 3DS out of storage, charge it up, and play a couple games on it. If anything, it was my Mega Man machine. It's got all my Mega Man games on it. So, 3DS, you've had a good run. You can rest. This story comes to us courtesy of Alex. This one says, the Canadian privacy watchdogs taking Facebook to court over privacy failures. I'm just going to read this. This comes to us courtesy of ctvnews.ca. Canada's privacy czar is taking Facebook to court after finding the social media giant's lax practices allowed personal information to be used for political purposes. A long-awaited joint report from Privacy Commissioner Daniel Theron and his British Columbia counterpart Michael McElvoy uncovered major shortcomings in Facebook's procedures and called for stronger laws to protect Canadians. The commissioner expressed dismay Thursday that Facebook has rebuffed their findings and recommendations. It is completely unacceptable, Theron told the news conference, lamenting his office's lack of enforcement powers. I cannot, as a regulator, insist that they act responsibly. Facebook insisted Thursday that it took the investigation seriously, engaging in months of good faith cooperation and lengthy negotiations, as well as offering to enter a compliance agreement with Theron's office. The probe filed reports that Facebook had let an outside organization use an app to access users' personal information, and that of some of the data was then passed on to others. Recipients of the information included the firm Cambridge Analytica, which is a name you should probably recognize, which was involved in the U.S. political campaigns. The app at one point was known as This Is Your Digital Life, encouraged users to complete a personalized quiz, but collected much more information about the people who installed the app, as well as data about their Facebook friends, the commissioner said. About 300,000 Facebook users worldwide added the app, leading to the potential disclosure of the personal information of approximately 87 million others, including more than 600,000 Canadians.
It doesn't
Yikes,
sound
Facebook.
Yeah. Numbers wise, if you're an American listener, it doesn't sound like much. But when you consider that our population is about a tenth of the states, but we have the second most powerful buying power when it comes to internet ad revenue and everything, because we actually have more users per capita of Facebook and all these products than in the states, because it's fucking cold in the winter and we don't want to go outside and do things. So you look at that. A lot of times what happens up here when it becomes federal law trickles down and affects the states in ways that you might not expect. So they are actually going to be taking a closer look at this. And I imagine they're probably afraid that if it catches up here, you might find some senators in the states that start to campaign for these sorts of things too. And it's actually a good thing in this case if they were to regulate that and say, hey, stop stealing our fucking information. Or if you're going to use our information, you have to tell us everything we're using in terms we understand. Whereas right now it's like Wild West. Oh, you installed this? Well, we're just going to steal this shit. And there's nothing you can do about it because there's no law preventing it.
Yeah, and specifically research firms like Cambridge Analytica, who've been tied to U.S. political campaigns, they know how to target you, and because they can access you, they can access your friends, and it's a ripple effect. You drop one stone in the water, and you don't know how far those ripples are going to go. So 87 million actually seems like a small number to me. I'm actually really surprised it's that low, all things considered. I mean,
remember, this is one app. This was one app, one survey, one singular survey that they – the reason they're going after this is because this is the one they have the biggest case against. But look through your Facebook feed and count how many stupid surveys your friends post. What kind of tree am I? Or if I was an Avenger, this is who I'd be. All those ones, they're all the exact same. They're the ones that grab all your information. So this is one out of potentially thousands of surveys and thousands of these, you know, avatar-y type things that pop up on your screen every day. So 84 million, it's in the long run. This law would, or if they brought in a law against it, would then affect billions.
Yeah, like Facebook's reach is immeasurable at this point. Like it seeps into everything, literally every part of your life, more or less.
And
we did stories
before about how it's the de facto news source in a lot of developing countries.
Yeah, like a lot of people, this is where they get their particular news from, and they don't trust media like traditional, be it ABC, CNBC, CBC, etc. They trust what's posted on their Facebook, and those could be influenced by any number of outside factors. I mean, I know one, I think, in Canada that's getting a look at, and I want to say, I can't remember the name of the organization. I think it's Ontario Proud is the one that has racist ties to it. Don't quote me on that. I know it's something Proud.
Yeah, it's is the one with the... There is something going around how the the guy who's the new federal...
PC leader. Andrew Scheer or PC, something?
For anybody in the States, basically he's like the equivalent of Republican. Even though our politics traditionally do lean a little more to the left, even on our conservative side. But he's now... There's news going out around that he's tied to white nationalists, the uber conservative Christian right, all this stuff. So things are seeping in. But again, I don't trust it if it's on Facebook for the first point. You look at one of those ads, what you're supposed to do is look at that and go, is that real? And then try to do some real research if you're really concerned.
I mean, one of the old standbys used to be Snopes it before you post it. But even then, you don't know who's influencing it. So it's difficult to say who you can trust in the media these days. I mean, I always like my rule of thumb is find it from three different sources. See if they line up.
In college, I mean, I didn't take journalism, but in my communications course and in my business law courses, they said 3 to 4 sources. If you're getting your news, they said generally, you know, grab it from, if you're going for Canada, you grab it from CTV News and you grab it from CBC. So you get the government news, the publicly funded one. You get a privately funded news source, and then you grab the BBC or you grab an Al Jazeera or something that's more international and compare it.
Yep, that's typically how I've always done it. And this is depressing to say, but one of the most reliable sources for celebrity news is honestly TMZ.
When it comes, well, here's the thing. My business law teacher said, oh, if it's a celebrity death or somebody in a car crash, you don't need more than one source. TMZ is almost always right. And we were like, why? And he goes, because they've been sued enough to not post anything till they know. it was the same as the National Enquirer. How many times did they reveal some sort of scandal in that tabloid magazine, that, you know, the dirt rags, and then they were sued, you know, some celebrity would sue for $1 million and they'd fucking lose the case because the Enquirer was right. Now, that's still more of a tabloid, but TMZ, like, if you're like, you see on Facebook, oh, so-and-so is in a coma and dying, and you're like, what? First thing you do, pull it up TMZ, because TMZ, as stupid as their television show is and as ridiculous as their website looks, as far as from a visual aesthetic, if you go to their articles, they circle things, they take pictures, they show all their sources, everything is right up front.
And they update it by the minute. If something changes, you'll know. And that's the kind of era that we live in when it comes to news. So
scary, but you know what? Do take 10 seconds to do some research. Don't just believe things at face value. And that part of that issue is like our parents' generation, anybody I would say in their 50s or older, they grew up in an era where the news was generally impartial for the most part, but like the news was the news. So when they see news on Facebook, they can't tell the difference between what is real and what is fake. So they get freaked out by all that fake news hype, not realizing that 99% of the time somebody yells fake news, that's the fake news.
Yeah.
Like they can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Like I know example for growing up in my grandparents' household, their news consumption was very questionable at best. I mean, I'm not saying they were a Fox News people, but these are the same people that used to watch Inside Edition and Hard Copy at some points and not walk away with the right message from the story.
So basically they'd watch 60 Minutes and then side with somebody else, or they'd watch To Catch a Predator and go, you know, I think he didn't get a fair shake.
Yeah, he'd say that guy didn't exactly get a fair trial there. So anyway, that's going to do it for the news this week here on the show. So coming up next on the show, we're going to take an extended look at Sony Computer Entertainment's open world apocalypse game, Days Gone, with Alex. We'll be back, guys, right after this, right here on Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
One of the larger, more anticipated titles of the last couple years for the PlayStation has been Days Gone, and Sony gave us a copy so that we could try it out ahead of time, about a few weeks before release, because it's a very large game. We're talking 30 to 60 hours or so to complete, with full, you know, 100% completionist in there. And we sort of were deciding who was going to review it, and I thought, you know what, this is the year where I'm trying new things, trying new games, styles of things that I wouldn't normally play. You know, one, I'm not usually an open game guy. Like, I'm the guy that didn't like Skyrim. I'm also the guy that is the biggest fraidy cat when it comes to scary games and horror games and things like that, you know, of that nature entirely. So I was like, well, let me check off a couple things off my checklist and see if I can cover this and give it a fair shake. And I was actually pretty pleasantly surprised. But before I get into that, what is Days Gone? Days Gone is a survival horror action-adventure open-world zombie game. Now, it's a bit of, I guess, like Far Cry-style feel to it, mixed with like a Last of Us, Resident Evil sort of zombie apocalypse or post-apocalyptic take on the gameplay. Now, I'm not going to go into the story, really, because reality is you've seen a lot of these. You know what you're dealing with. It's basically you're a guy on a bike, and you're going through the Pacific Northwest, and you're sort of helping people along the way, as well as trying to survive the massive amounts of zombies that can be on screen at once. And there can be a lot, and it's kind of daunting and terrifying. So I'll give you, sort of break this up into a few little chunks, you know, sort of graphics, sound, and so on. I'll go first, though, with here, let's get things out of the way. Things I didn't like about this game from a technical standpoint. Now, from the audio side of things, what I didn't like was that there were a fair amount of glitches that can probably be worked out, but I found that dialogue was popping up at weird times. I even had things where it triggered mission dialogue when it shouldn't. Let's say I had already completed a mission, or I had started a new mission and it would repeat the dialogue twice. It didn't make any sense. That's a little glitch that can be easily worked out. Like, you know, they can patch it. So that's not a big deal. There can be stability fixes for that. I did find that there was, to be honest, a pretty atrocious load time, considering that I'm playing it on PS4 Pro. I'm only playing it at 1080p, and I'll get into the reason as to why later. But I'm playing it on a PS4 Pro with a solid-state hard drive upgrade. So it should be about 30 to 50% faster at loading. And it was still like over a minute to load certain levels or missions if I died, which is kind of a big deal because I know it's a large game and it's pretty advanced. But the problem is other games are out there that load almost instantaneously. So that shouldn't have been anything I was worried about. Now, and then anything else that I didn't like, there's a lot of repetitiveness to the missions. Like, you know, you got to fix your bike, you got to move on. And I mean, some people may like the repetitiveness of that. I found that the characters, you meet a lot of different people in this game. I didn't find most of them very compelling. It just sort of felt like they were there just to, here's your mission, here's what you're doing. I didn't feel a connection to them, and it might be a issue with having that many characters in a game, like, because there's a lot. They're sort of, most people are one-dimensional, and I think because the game is very cinematic and very large and sort of in scope, that I kind of expected more from the narrative side of things. Now, that's pretty much it. The technical glitches aside, I wasn't a big fan at the beginning of the actual riding your motorcycle mechanics because I found that to be a little bit stiff. And other than that, you know, you get used to it, so that's fine. And I'm, the other thing is, I'm from the keep it simple, stupid standpoint of crafting. I don't like that you have to press two or three buttons to, you know, navigate menus to craft. Now, I would prefer to open up a menu, like a pause screen or something, and then just do it. Now, I get the idea is you're supposed to be doing it on the go as things are happening around you like crazy, which is fine. So, you know, in that sense, that's sort of a nitpicky thing. Basically, what I found were some audio glitches, and then I found some glitches with the load times and that. And the other thing is I played this, again, like I said, on a PS4 Pro, and it makes my system scream like it's basically taking off into space. Like, it's a rocket. The fans go crazy. And you know, I keep my system very clean. You know, I dust it, clean it up. It is a launch PS4 Pro, but that being said, it's well ventilated in a cool room. You know, it should not be making this kind of noise. So I had to drop it from 4K down to 1080p. And we're not talking HDR. And if this was 4K with HDR, you'd have to wear headphones or crank your volume on your TV up because it is making the system hurt. I don't know if it's a thing with it being not well optimized, or if it's just a casualty of that the technology for the system is now outdated and this is really pushing it to its limit, which it could be. And if that's the case, then I'm sure that whenever, you know, in a year or something, when the PlayStation 5 comes out, they'll port this over. It'll look even better and then be completely silent or something. But it is making my system hurt. So I can only imagine the frame rate and loading issues would be terrible if you didn't have a solid-state drive and you're playing it on an original, let's say, stock or a slim PS4. And again, a lot of these things can be mitigated by changing your resolution down to 1080p in my case, or you know, just basically patches could probably optimize some certain things, or they could, it would be simple, just give you an option in the game. It's like, hey, put it on performance mode, which, you know, maybe turns down some of the graphical sheen, because there's a lot of details in here that I think it's having issues rendering, like some of the leaves and the trees and stuff are just all individually done. So you know, that again is sort of nitpicky, but it is a loud game. Like it made my system scream just as bad as Kingdom Hearts and Spider-Man did when I played them on 4K. So you know, that's the bad stuff out of the way. Now let's get to the good stuff. As far as good story, it's got a compelling story, and you know, it's built up its world very, very well. You're traveling around the Pacific Northwest doing missions and meeting people and fixing your bike and sort of just trying to survive and trying to help sort of people out, while all the while, you know, trying to make sure that the zombies don't just overrun and destroy you. So it builds a really good atmosphere. It's beautiful as far as graphics go. Some of the best graphics I've seen in the system, especially the environments. Not the best, I would say, facials and character models. That, you know, surprisingly still has to go to The Order in my mind. Now, The Order was basically 10 hours of gameplay, and that was it. So, I mean, or 5 to 10 hours. So that doesn't count. But, I mean, it's interesting that we're at a point now where we can make these environments really good, and you could make the facials and all the character models really, really good. But it's funny that a 3 or 4 year old game is still better looking than this. But then again, that was the exception. That being said, it's one of the best visually looking games on the system, or on any system for that matter, right now. The beating up the zombies, especially using melee attacks, gives you a very visceral, very guttural feel, and there's weight to everything. It feels realistic. The physics are fantastic in this game. You do have a sense of dread in that you can lose a lot of your items very fast, and you're always scavenging, but it never feels like a chore to scavenge for items to fix your bike, or to, you know, make Molotov cocktails, or to find ammunition and make improvised weapons. Like, you can make bats with nails in them, you can make bats with saw blades in them. There's ridiculous crazy shit in there. So, you know, that part of it, the graphics and the feel of the world is perfect. Other than the audio issues I had earlier, like I said, with some of the dialogue popping in, and that the audio design is fantastic, and the music ramps up when it needs to. I have it in, you know, Dolby 5.1 surround mode, and the spatial audio is really good. There's a really good atmospheric feel. You know where people are coming from. If the enemies start coming at you from the back right, you can hear it faintly from the back right rustling towards you, and it gets louder and louder as it hits you. So the sound design is very, very good. Other than the visuals and the sound design, the controls, with the exception I said at the beginning of the bike controls, are pretty spot on. You feel that they're very responsive. It does exactly what you want it to do. There's no weird aimy issues or anything. It's just very concise and you know, pinpoint accuracy to pretty much everything you do. So that is, you know, good as far as the mechanics go. Overall, I thought it was a really, really fun game. There's more fun to be had, I think, in exploring in this game than there is to actually doing the main missions, and that could be tedious. If you're somebody who wants to complete everything, you're going to be spending 60, maybe 100 hours, depending on your difficulty and how you play, beating it. So if you like that style of game, I'm usually a person that likes to be led down a narrative path and then maybe have it branch out a little bit, where you get to pick a few different options. You know, a la like the BioWare Mass Effect sort of mode where, yes, you have a main narrative and maybe you can tackle each planet or each section at a time, you know, a little differently. Maybe there's an open world like a Dragon Age Inquisition, but there's still main missions to do, and you're sort of, I don't like hand-holding, but I do like having a main mission that's very concise and easy to follow. So you don't have that here the same way. You do have your main missions that you follow, but I felt like I was deviating from that a lot more than I normally would in a game like that. So as far as the sandbox open world, you know, exploration game, there's tons of stuff to find. There is tons to do in this game. And I would say the voice acting is pretty good. You know, if a little shallow with some of the characters, it's weird. You know, if this was a game with, let's say, a lower budget and had less sheen on it, you would say, oh, it's just middling and average. But it has AAA, you know, budget behind it, so it elevates it a bit. This is not as good as, you know, I didn't play The Last of Us, but I basically watched my brother do a full playthrough of it when it came out, because again, I'm the fraidy cat, and that had a much better narrative and really made you feel for all the characters. So you're not getting that experience here. You're getting the much more like Far Cry open world sort of experience. That being said, I really, really enjoyed it. I was terrified. Like, I was playing and, you know, for review the last, you know, couple weeks, and my roommate would come by and he's like, what are you playing? I'm like, shh, quiet, terrified. And, you know, a zombie would pop out of nowhere and I would just scream, ah, oh my God. And I would have goosebumps the whole time, but I was actually having fun. And usually when I play, or if I've played horror games, I'll get terrified and I literally just turn the system off. Like, here's a story. I was at a friend's house when they were playing the original Resident Evil on PlayStation 1. I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and my friend's older brother, who was 6 years older than us at the time, or I guess he's still 6 years older, he was playing it, and they got to the point right in the beginning of the game when the dogs jumped through the window. And I got so terrified, I jumped up from the couch, ran up, and turned the power off to the system and said, nope. And they were sort of mad at first, but then couldn't stop laughing because of how fast I moved. I was a chubby kid even then. And just hopping up and just turn it off. Nope, you're not playing that while I'm here, because I was that terrified. So that being said, this was hard for me to get through initially. And then I got more and more exhilarated as I went through. But I had to take it in smaller doses. Whereas when I start playing a game obsessively, let's say like a JRPG or something, or just a game like Spider-Man or something that was really engrossing to me, I'm the guy that will play 8 hours a day or 9 hours. I found I had to play this basically, I could play maybe 4 or 5 hours a day, but I had to play it in bits and spurts because for me, it was so intense with the scariness factor. And they did a really good job of building an atmosphere that is tense, where there can be scary things at every move. And Ben Studio should be very commended for this, because it was just a pretty, pretty damn awesome experience. If you are a, you know, PlayStation owner, obviously this is an exclusive. This should be one of your must-buys for the year, unless you are not into the zombie thing, because in truth be told, the zombie craze, I think, has been over or going on a downward slump. It's not, you know, this, they could have replaced the zombies in here with anything. Could have been demons, could have been vampires, would have been cool. I do think that, you know, this, we've hit the pinnacle with this Last of Us, and probably the upcoming Last of Us 2, of what you can do with a zombie game, and I think they'll have to from then move on to something else. But that being said, this is sort of going to be one of the biggest games for zombies ever. And you know, if you were a big fan of the Resident Evil game that came out, the two remastered ones that have come out in the last few months, this is going to be another one for you. If you're not generally a zombie fan or a horror fan like myself when it comes to games, I still say give it a try, because I really, really found myself enjoying it. So that's Days Gone from Ben Studio and Sony.
Makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And welcome back to Twig Your Flags of Stupidity. Now it's time to talk about the weird, wacky, the just plain fucked up things that happened on planet Earth this week. And this one comes to us courtesy of Thailand. We're going to talk about the Avengers yet again. And, this one was in Hong Kong, sorry. Evidently, Taiwanese media is reporting that a man who was not identified was left bloodied outside a cinema in Causeway Bay after watching the movie. Basically, he decided to start shouting out spoilers to fans who were waiting in line to see the movie, and a photo of the purported victim has circulated online and shows him sitting on the street covered in blood. Now, I'd heard stories about people shouting spoilers in the lines in Toronto. Nobody got their ass kicked that I'm aware of, but don't be that guy.
You know, yeah, I never did any of that. The only time I ever spoiled anything for anybody was leaving. I think it was Resident Evil 6 or 7, whatever the last stupid shit was. I went in there, watched the movie on a cheap day, first of all, so I only paid like $6, and I was still pissed at how bad it was. I start walking out. There's a line of people to go there because it was, you know, people were dumb. And you know how they have like the ushers and you put your 3D glasses there and all that and you put them away? So I'm putting them away. He goes, oh, I hope, did you enjoy your movie? And I said, fuck no. And it's the only time I ever yelled that out. And I went, that was the stupidest shit ever. And I started rambling about all that. People went, hey, spoilers. And I said, here's a spoiler. You're going to fucking hate it. And then I walked away. But I actually had a friend that when Revenge of the Sith was coming out, I was still like in high school. And there was a kid in my class that decided that he saw it. He saw like one of the early screenings. Like, you know, he won tickets to see it like a day or two early. And he's in class, and my one buddy is in front of me, and this guy's in front of him. So this guy turns around to talk to him, and he's like, you know, you want to hear a spoiler about, Star Wars? And my buddy was one of the biggest Star Wars fans ever. And he goes, no, very, very calmly, no. And he goes, well, I'm going to tell you anyway. And at this point, I'm ready to get up and leave the class. I don't care what's happening. I'm just like, I'm not going to be there. And he starts opening his mouth to say something, and my friend pulls out a pencil and stabs him in the hand.
What?
And by stab, I mean it's sticking out the top of his hand.
Oh,
and
my God.
And he goes, I was only going to say that Darth Vader is in it. And he goes, do you want another stab? And then he got kicked out of class for 3 days. But my teacher was sympathetic because he asked why did it happen. He goes, he tried to spoil Star Wars. And he goes, oh, good thing he didn't have a knife. And it was like,
my God.
I mean, the kid, it's like, that was a thing you just didn't do. There's specifically certain movies, you don't fuck around with that shit because there are people that are that big of fans.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty much prime time for any Marvel movie now. DC movies to a certain extent, Star Wars for sure.
Well, I imagine like there are people right now that maybe can't afford even for television, like Game of Thrones, right? We're now into the last three episodes. Like, so if you just subscribe for the month now to watch, cool. But there are people that can't afford to watch it till it's all done or they're waiting. And if you spoil what's been happening, let's say in the big battles in Game of Thrones, I would not be surprised if violence starts to happen. Like, especially the last episode, fully expect to see stories on you know, the news about people that got into fights over shit that happened in Game of Thrones.
I've seen friendships break up over spoilers. I mean, I remember seeing a few friends stop talking over Breaking Bad.
Here's the thing. If you do it accidentally, like you're whispering or talking to a friend and somebody else walks into the room, that's a mistake. That's you know, you can't help that. If you're purposely trying to spoil something for somebody, you don't know what their lives are going, what they've been through in their lives. These are people, especially if they're super duper fans. Some people are crazy, you know, like my friend was, and they'll stab a motherfucker over it. But as far as like, in some cases, let's say, okay, the Bumblebee movie, right?
Yeah.
You know, people like you and I that are huge fans of the original G1 series had been waiting really since we were little kids for a movie that had scenes or had a feel that matched the original show and movie. And it finally happened with Bumblebee. You know, what would you have done if you had heard it was really good, but you know, and somebody walked up to you as you're going into the theater and I won't spoil, actually that movie's been out long enough now in video, I could say it. Like, if you had no idea that there was going to be Cybertron shots and that they were going to have all of basically the G1 cast in the first couple minutes and then a little bit throughout. And somebody told you, oh, in the first 3 or 4 minutes, so-and-so dies, this is this, Bumblebee talks, blah, blah. You're like, motherfucker. You would probably stab a motherfucker.
Yeah, I would be angry, irrationally so, but yes.
But yeah, it's the same idea. Like, if you're doing it to troll somebody, you deserve to, maybe not to get beat to a bloody pulp where you're lying in a pool of your own blood. But then again, you know, let's say, I'm trying to think of another movie. Like, if somebody spoils the next, like, the final Star Wars movie of this new trilogy, you know, I like early to somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if there's people out there that want to like sodomize somebody with like a rusty fishing knife or something over it, because there are people that are that fucking crazy, that are that rabid, especially in certain fandoms. You do not fuck around with Star Wars. You do not fuck around with Marvel. DC, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, you said it quite succinctly. Because, sorry, DC, you ain't hitting any winners anytime soon. Although, Shazam was pretty cool.
I'll scale myself back. Maybe not sodomize with a rusty fishing knife. That might be a little harsh. we can reserve that for something more heinous, I guess. Maybe boiled in oil and have their fat sold for soap or something instead.
All right, Fight Club. So moving on to our next story in the weird news this week. So NASA and FEMA, or the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and other national and international agencies are once again gearing up for a hypothetical asteroid impact preparedness scenario. They hope to learn the best strategies for responding to a potential strike starting from the moment a threatening asteroid is first detected by astronomers. So next week will mark the International Academy of Astronautics Planetary Defense Conference. As part of this conference, NASA's Planetary Defense Coordination Office will team up with other partners to perform a tabletop exercise on how they handle the news of a fictional asteroid on a collision course with Earth. So, on March 26, 2019, astronomers discover an asteroid in the night sky far dimmer than Pluto in their telescopes. They name the asteroid 2019 PDC. Initially, it appears that the asteroid's eccentric orbit will bring it within approximately 18 times the moon's distance from the Earth, with a chance of hitting the Earth at 1 in 50,000 in 2027. Astronomers continue to track the object as it gets closer. They learn it could be somewhere between the size of 100 and 300 meters wide, or the size of a skyscraper. After a month of tracking, the probability of collision with Earth is now 1%, the threshold at which the international organization have agreed that it must take action. Astronomers are able to create a risk corridor measuring where the asteroid might hit. Its potential paths intersect the United States, some of Western Africa, the Atlantic, and the Pacific Ocean. Even though this is just kind of a drill, this basically kind of gets us ready if something does happen, because we can only monitor so much of the sky for NEO, aka near Earth objects. And believe me, you want a NASA budget so you can do this sort of thing.
If they're going to have an asteroid hit, we may as well have it hit in the next 10 years so we can pretty much ensure that we could just send, I don't know, like Ben Affleck or somebody up there while they're still young enough to blow it up. Or, I mean, it's not like, it's not like Bruce Willis is really good for anything else anymore. So just send them up there and let him blow up and we'll be fine.
Like, same as Batman.
What are we going to do once everybody from Deep Impact and Armageddon are dead? Like, we're going to have to start from scratch again.
I don't know. I mean, I always find it interesting how people never take these threats seriously. And I do think we are at a point in our civilization where, as long as it's not the size of bloody Africa, this asteroid, we can reasonably do something about it.
Yeah, I think the idea is, though, if it's a bad one, we're all going to die anyway. So there's really no point in changing your behavior until the time comes.
Yeah, like at some point there's going to be, as Deep Impact said, an ELE, an extinction level event. Sometimes maybe not knowing is better.
And also, like, what you say was 2019 PDC? Was that the name of it?
Yes. Yeah, that's the fictional.
What does that, like, stand for? Pure dong cheese or something?
Yes, Alex, that's exactly what it stands for in the scientific community.
We named the asteroid Pure Dong Cheese. They're like, why? Well, I just thought it didn't quite match, like, Philadelphia cream cheese, so Pure Dong Cheese.
Oh God, you made me sick in my mouth when you said that. You're so
gross. Welcome.
No. But yeah, I'm really glad that there is an international response to this so they can project how this could be averted, how it's dealt with. Let's say, does it get hit? Does it get deflected? Does it miss us? But even at a 1% chance, I mean, I think right now there are asteroids that have, I know there's the asteroid Apophis, I think, has a chance to hit us in 2049 or so. I can't remember the names of them off the top of my head, but I know there's a few asteroids that have a good chance to hit us in the next couple of hundred years, and there's one that'll hit in 800, which has a really good chance of hitting us.
Are they all named after, you know, different
Egyptian gods,
Stargate
characters? Like, not that I'm aware of.
If we're going to get hit by Teal, I mean, it's okay because he's cool, but, like, you know, name it something awesome. I don't know. Name it, like, get hit by Geordi LaForge. And, like, why did you call it that?
It's Geordi LaForge, the asteroid.
Yeah, it's like, why? Oh, because it's a blinding light asteroid that's going to, like, blind everybody before it hits us.
Although, I would like to know what the results of some of these things are. But I can imagine they probably would be classified from the public in case there's an, oh, fuck, we can't win scenario.
Yeah, I imagine, like, because, I mean, how we get hit with little micro asteroids every day, don't we? Or on the fairly,
yes.
You know, it's not unheard of. I mean, it would all depend. Like, what I've never seen in a movie that could be something that potentially happens in real life is, well, maybe a meteor doesn't hit us. Maybe it fucking hits the moon. The moon cracks in half and half of it lands on the Earth. And then it fucks the tides up.
Well, if the moon hits the Earth, we're dead. It's game over.
No, I mean a chunk of it. Like, you know, completely throwing off our tides and you know, day-night cycle.
Yeah, that's true. Or if a large asteroid impacts Mars, that's another possibility. Or even Venus. The possibilities for that type of destruction are there. Because we don't know what asteroids are behind the sun with its gravitational pull and everything. Like, there's a lot we don't know. But luckily asteroids don't move like they do in movies where they move super fast. No, they're fairly slow, and we should see them coming in theory.
I mean, I might be wrong with the physics, but they'll only speed up as they get close to us, right? As they hit our gravity, or at least hit our sun's gravity.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see. But I actually have another space story here this week, and this one's kind of weird. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here. So this one comes to us from futurism.com. Pikachu, a well-loved house cat, not the electric mouse Pokemon, who died in January from complications from diabetes, is going to blast off. Owner Steve Munt plans to send some of Pikachu's ashes into space, according to space.com, a strange tribute that will make Pikachu the first cremated cat to enter orbit. Shuttling Pikachu into the cosmos will be the pet memorial service Celestius, Pets, an offshoot of the human space memorial company, Celestius. Munt is currently raising money through a GoFundMe to help pay for Pikachu's $5,000 ticket, but he told space.com he already bought a ticket for launch. It'll in sometime in the next 18 months.
That's actually kind of cheap when you consider, like, I mean, yeah, they're just sending ashes, so I'm assuming it's in a little small square, like, flat box receptacle or something, and there's going to be more than one obviously being shot up, but is that the same company that ended up sending up James Doohan, Scotty from Star Trek's ashes?
Because it doesn't say in,
I know
in,
he was the,
in
first,
the article.
I believe he was the first humans to have his ashes put into space. It was years and years ago.
It doesn't say in my article, but I want to say NASA may have directly been involved in that particular.
Yeah, that
one.
Might have been that. Actually, might have been NASA because they still had money back then.
So according to this, they've already put two pets into orbit already, though there were two dogs. Now the company says the ashes will remain until they are vaporized upon re-entering the atmosphere. The cat or dog's remains will be too small to see, but the company poetically likens the vaporization to a shooting star streaking across the sky. Munt told Space.com that he wanted Pikachu to be the first and to continue his legacy as an explorer and show the world that a cat is just as worthy of a dog of a special tribute. That's kind
of
cool.
That's awfully sweet and cool. Hey, part of me, would have wished that the cat had been named Meowth. Because then it would have been
Team Rocket blasting off again.
Yeah, there would have been. I mean, not that it's supposed to be funny, but I mean, it would have been even more ironic and that. But you know what? That's actually kind of a cool idea. If you have that kind of disposable income to do that, that's not that bad. Think about this: it costs a lot more than that to actually have a funeral for a human. So, it can cost. You can have vet bills that are more than that to try to fix a cat.
I'm actually looking at his GoFundMe right now. As of 3 months, he's been running it for 3 months. He's reached 2,100 of his $5,000 goal. So he's just about halfway there.
He might actually hit it. And it would be nice. I don't know. Like, it would be cool if it hits his goal and anything above that goal goes into some sort of charity for a shelter or something.
Exactly. I mean, have it done in like Pikachu's name sort of thing. But yeah, so I certainly hope this guy gets to put his beloved Pikachu into orbit. So Pikachu will always be looking down upon us as, like you said, like a shooting star. So coming up next here on the Weird News, we're going to do things a little bit differently here. We're going to take a look at Satan's Pantry, as we have been doing, taking a look at Inside Edition's WWE, the official cookbook. And we're going to take a look at Ric Flair's Whoopee Pies this week. And then finally, my review from Paramount Home Entertainment of Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on DVD. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
Dad, excuse me.
But WCW's own World Heavyweight Champion Hulk Hogan, he's got Pastamania.
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Give the people what they want.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net. And as you've noticed, we've kind of changed the direction of Satan's Pantry over the last little while. We've been taking a look at Inside Edition's various cookbooks, be they Fallout or The Elder Scrolls, or we're going to take a look at cookbooks coming from TMNT and The Walking Dead later on. But we're going to continue this edition of Satan's Pantry by taking a look at the official WWE cookbook coming from Alison Robicelli. And we're going to take a look at one of the most prolific WWE wrestlers of all time, and probably one of my favorite people to watch, especially his entrances. And we are talking about Ric Flair. But I'm not alone as I try these Whoopee Pies. I'm joined with...
Woo, Alex.
That's right. So we're taking a look at Ric Flair's Whoopee Pies, and my wife has been very generous in making these in the kitchen over the last little while. So big thank you to Blair for putting these together. So according to the official cookbook, make these pies and prove to your friends that you're the one styling, profiling, limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling and dealing son of a gun. And I've never had a Whoopee Pie before. And so some of the ingredients in this that these should make up to 20 to 25 Whoopee Pies, though if you look at our pictures on our Twitter and Instagram, they made about six or seven.
Or smaller batch, very large Whoopee Pies. Which I don't think Rick would complain about.
No, we made giant Whoopee Pies. So some of the ingredients include brown sugar, 2 cups peeled and shredded drained Granny Smith apples. That I didn't expect. We also have pumpkin pie spice, cream cheese,
Alex,
vanilla extract.
Alex is not a pumpkin pie fan, but we'll see how this goes.
Ground cinnamon and caramel spice. And they're kind of like muffin tops with like icing in the middle is how my wife described them to me.
Something you'd get from Little Debbie.
Yeah, exactly. Except these are more homemade. So I guess... Let's take a look at one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and this is one of his signature dishes, I guess.
Yeah.
So without any further ado, now these were chilled in the freezer briefly to give them kind of a cold texture. So holding it in my hand, definitely I get the impression of a cookie. Kind of, that's what it feels like.
Like a cookie cake if you like those giant ones you get from the grocery store, if you put a bunch of icing between it.
Yeah, so let's take our first bite of the whoopie pie. Oh my god, that's rich.
Okay.
That's... The pumpkin pie really hit you.
Yeah, I like it except for the pumpkin, so I'm kind of done with mine. It's not a matter of me not liking the recipe. I just hate everything pumpkin with a seething passion. So if you take the pumpkin spice out, I'd love it.
Yeah, for me, I really like the pumpkin pie of this. I just don't like how goopy it is because considering Blair made these things ridiculously freaking huge, I have cream cheese frosting all over my hand. But I don't know. I like the cakiness of the actual tops of them.
The texture is good. The fluffiness is good. It's fresh. The icing is good. Again, everything about it tastes amazing except for me. When I taste the pumpkin spice, I just want to like burn it in a fire. And that's not against the recipe. It's just I don't like pumpkin.
Yeah, for me, I love pumpkin. In fact, I really wish Mr. Christopher was here today because I think he'd love these. In fact, we're going to send a care package of these upstairs today so Tristan can enjoy these on his own time. So I'm going to have to say I think the Ric Flair's Whoopie Pies are definitely a winner in my book. They're a little bit time-consuming. These will take you well over an hour to make just with cook time, prep time, and cooling time in your freezer.
As an alternative for me, if you could remove the pumpkin spice and add maybe some more cinnamon or maybe a little chocolate powder or something to it, that would, for me, would make it better. That being said, I'm overall pretty impressed with it.
Yeah, I gotta say, the official WWE cookbook has pretty much been a winner from everything we've tried. We've had John Cena cereal bars, we've had Coffee Kingston, we've had Nacho Man Randy Savage, and every other recipe I've taken a look in here has been really, really, really impressive. There's been some weird ones. I'm actually really surprised that the New Day didn't have some kind of a pancake thing. Instead, it was, it was like a Budio inspired thing.
I'm wondering, because, you know, books take a longer time to press, it might have been that the recipes were done before they started doing the pancake thing.
Yeah.
So if they ever were to do a revision or an edition or another version of the book, they might include that.
Yeah. But overall, I'm going to say if you want to check this out, you should be able to find this through most major retailers right now. But obviously, Amazon being the best place to find this book right now. So check out Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. For the WWE, the official cookbook from Allison Robicelli, you definitely got a winner here. Definitely a three count right here on This Week in Geek and Satan's Pantry.
Chip, you know what? You just made the list.
Oh, no.
Oh, here we go.
We all can see you. How the hell you think we can miss? You come out here with your bright-ass purple shirt, and before that, your bright green shirt. Before that, your bright orange shirt. You run around here looking like a big fat bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
You can kiss my ass.
It's me, Austin!
Oh, son of a bitch!
What?
It's me, Austin! It was me all along, Austin!
Today we are looking at Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming to us from Paramount Home Entertainment. And this is something that's actually been a long time coming because I'm a huge Turtles fan. Have been since the 87 series, 2003, 2012, and even to a certain extent, The Next Mutation, which aired in the 90s. And this is definitely a new interpretation of the Turtles from Nickelodeon. And I can't say I hate it, and I can't say I like it either. It's kind of funny that way. For every one good thing this series does, it does about three things wrong. Definitely draws from a newer style of animation. But on this particular DVD, you are getting the episodes Mystic Mayhem, Origami, Tsunami, Donnie's Gifts, Warren Pizza, Mascot Melee, Shell in a Cell, and the Minotaur Maze. And these episodes, for all the ones that are there, there's only about two I like, but the other episodes have elements that I like. I think Warren Pizza's probably my favorite, where April, who's now reimagined as a teenage black girl rather than a news reporter or kind of a... She's still an ally to the Turtles, but I'll get to that. So she's working at a pizza parlor, and the Turtles are helping her throw a birthday party at this Chuck E. Cheese type restaurant, and it's surprisingly funny. It's really, really well done. The other episode that I liked would be Mascot Melee, where they have to go get Master Splinter
a new robe, but they have to dress up as mascots to go to Times Square so they can go to a robe shop. And that's got a couple chuckle-worthy moments in it. And the other episodes have hits and misses. Like, in the first episode, they get new weapons, and you kind of get into who they are as new characters. We're definitely, the team dynamic has changed, where Raph's the leader now. Donnie seems to be the second in command, although he shares a lot more in common with the reboot live-action movies than he does his other incarnations. Mikey's still Mikey, and Leo is kind of a show-off now, for lack of a better reason. And I don't know, it's hard to say whether I like or hate this series at this time. Given these episodes, this 90-minute DVD, I saw some of the best this series could be, and definitely some of the worst it could be. It's just, the animation and the art style just seems kind of lazy to me. It's not what I'm accustomed to, and I don't see the potential for serious storytelling that the 2003 and the 2012 series have done. They're definitely taking this towards a younger audience. That's not necessarily a bad thing. The voice cast definitely suits it. It works. Although it's really weird not hearing Greg Sipes as Mikey anymore. I really miss him. Or Rob Paulsen, though I think he's the voice director for this series. So, overall, I'm going to say for Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, catch an episode on TV. If it catches your fancy there, then maybe give this DVD a whirl. But as of right now, I can't recommend this in good conscience, because like I said, for every one good thing it does about three things backwards. And that's the kind of show it has been here on This Week in Geek Twig, your flagship of stupidity. Definitely thank you for joining me and Alex, the producer, on this journey through a lot of Avengers talk this week. But that's just the way it's kind of been. Speaking of the Avengers, we will have a spoiler-filled discussion on Nerds of the Third Power tomorrow. I'll be joining Dr. Gonzo, Skyblaze, and whoever else decides to show up on that show this week to talk about Avengers Endgame. We should have another Turd or Treasure this week. I will be reviewing the PDP Smash controller, though I don't think that's its proper name.
It's basically what it's used for, and you have the cutest controller ever.
It is pink, it's Princess Peach, and I love it. Fight me in Smash, which I haven't played in a while, so this will be kind of fun to do that. Coming up next week on the show, kind of exciting, we'll be taking a look at NetherRealm's PS4 version of Mortal Kombat 11. Me and Alex have been taking an extended look at that game, so we'll have our full impressions of that, though. If you think I'm spending any money on microtransactions, you got another thing coming.
Same here. That's our preview for it.
Exactly. I'm not spending fuck all on this game. But other than that, though, we'll have some other cool stuff. I have a Lego visual dictionary from the Star Wars universe to take a look at from DK Publishing, so be sure to be looking for that. And you've got a wedding and a bachelor party coming up next week, so you're
going to be excited. The reason I've had, you know, some shows where I've been putting out a lot of my reviews is I was making sure that I have my slate clean, because this coming Saturday is a bachelor party for my brother. It's super nerdy. No strippers. I had to ask like five times, no strippers? He's like, no strippers. So we're doing we're going to the Round Table, which is formerly known as the Watchtower, which if you were at GenreCon with us, they were one of the vendors, sponsors there. And they're like a fantasy themed restaurant, like fantasy sci-fi, and then we're going to go to like a retro barcade.
That should be a really, really, really fun time. I know for my bachelor party, we did have strippers, and there's more to that story that'll never be revealed on this show.
Oh my.
But we did go to the arcade, and I was hustling people in Street Fighter 4, so I felt pretty good. Good times that night. But anyway, guys, so we'll have a lot of stuff coming up on the site this week. I should be back on Future Imperfect or Altered Geek this week, the talk with Steve Megatron Phillips. So be sure to be looking for that, as I have to catch up on the finale of Star Trek Discovery Season 2, which I hear is quite the game changer.
It's pretty good.
So looking forward to that. So anyway, until next time, we have been...
And Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying be cool, be kind, be careful, and as always, live for your Die Hard.
Well, that's our show.
All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back.
Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Twig, the flagship... son of a bitch.
Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.